You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Ryan Terrell, the co-coordinator for Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
Brian, I had seen online a couple of days ago from an email I got, nonviolent protester of drone wars sentenced to federal prison. And of course, this article is alluding to you. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment. Mm-hmm. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Okay, I've been part of the Catholic worker movement for a long time and living on a Catholic worker farm in southwest Iowa. And the last few years, I've also been working very closely with Voices for Creative Nonviolence based in Chicago. And with Voices, I've been part of delegations to Iraq and Afghanistan and most recently to Bahrain. It's kind of a citizen diplomacy and meeting people who are the victims of U.S. policies and not only the people who are benefiting from them, as many American tourists would. With working for Voices and in the broader disarmament movement, we've been getting more and more aware of the use of drones in Afghanistan, especially, then in Pakistan, and increasingly and in other parts of the world. And in travels to Afghanistan, I've met victims of drone attacks and heard firsthand about the devastation these machines make. And so for the past few years, trying to educate myself and other people and agitate against using drones in warfare has been a big priority for me.
So you've actually been to these countries that most people can only dream of.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen a lot, I would imagine.
Yes.
Okay. You're an American. You grew up here in the United States?
Yes.
Okay. What did you do for your occupation?
Most of my working life, I've worked as a nurse's aide in a nursing home to get money, but have been an activist since I was a teenager, and most of my employment for cash has been just ways for me to be an activist. I've not really pursued a career. For the last 26 years, we've been living on this farm. We raise goats and chickens and make cheese and do weaving for some of our cash as well, and trying to live close to the land and live simply and cheaply. And occasionally, I get paid honorariums for speaking, and I do quite a bit of writing, and once in a while, I get paid for that. But it's a very rich but very marginal lifestyle. So,
well, I mean, I guess that is your career, being an activist, and that's your chosen career, and that's a great mm-hmm. thing. And you're going to be way ahead of the game when one day, whenever that is, the machine stops, as Ian mm-hmm. Forster said, because it will. It has to, whether it's from a nuclear EMP attack or a solar EMP event or something worse.
Right, or even something better. If peace breaks out...
yeah.
And there's justice. People around the world are not going to be slaving to feed us.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to figure out some things on our own. You know, so much of our lifestyles are based on a wartime economy, the military-industrial complex. Most of the things that we wear and eat and use are from sweatshops or from corporate farms and in other places, or the labor being done by people from other places who would rather be feeding themselves and taking care of their own families than feeding us. We are practicing for when peace breaks out and when we'll have to be more self-reliant. So that's what I'm, rather than the scenarios you've just laid out, which I do agree are very likely, I hold out hopes for another one.
I don't know if I have any hope anymore, because it seems that all the good things eventually get quashed and squashed, like what you were doing. And I was amazed to hear about this, because I did watch the video of this nonviolent protest in front of this Air Force base, not even very close to the gate, it seemed, Whiteman Air Force Base. And I guess Whiteman Air Force Base is in Missouri, right?
Yes, it's just about an hour and a half east of Kansas City.
Okay. And what's significant about Whiteman Air Force Base?
Well, Whiteman Air Force Base, these last few years, has been most of what it's done. It's been the only base now for the B-2 stealth bomber. So whenever you hear about B-2 bombers being used, they are all based at Whiteman Air Force Base at present. And this is, of course, nuclear capability and has been used most recently in Libya. It was the first plane to get into the airspace of Afghanistan 11 years ago this month when the war there started. But I think close to 2 years, it's also been the home to a wing of the Predator drones. We don't know the numbers, but we do know that 24 hours, 7 days a week, there are drones being flown over, at least we know of, Afghanistan and Pakistan. And Air Force personnel sitting in trailers at Whiteman Air Force Base are sitting at computer consoles, and they are operating drones that are launched from the ground overseas. But once they're in the air, these drones are being operated by remote control, controls designed to be compatible with PlayStation and the education of these young airmen and women. And they are involved in real-time combat, state-of-the-art video feed, high-resolution video walking things on the ground, and they are actually dropping 500-pound bombs and shooting Hellfire missiles at either pre-selected targets or the signature attacks, where if these young men and women see activity on the ground they think is compatible with what insurgents might be doing, they are attacking. And the pre-selected targets are very disturbing as well, because these are people that the president and other people in the Pentagon and State Department decide, usually based on evidence that none of us will ever see and certainly will never be reviewed by any court, not in combat situations, but these drones are just looking for particular people, and when they see them, they shoot their missiles, and when they do that, this is not an assassin's bullet. These are bombs and missiles that destroy whole buildings. So they kill them and everyone around them, and very, very often we know they don't hit their target the first time. They've made quite a few mistakes. Right now, there are probably about a dozen sites in the United States from where airmen and women are operating drones from in the States that are operating in other places far away.
Historical fact, Whiteman Air Force Base is named after this fella, Second Lieutenant George Allison Whiteman, who was born in 1919 and he died in 1941. He wasn't very old, maybe 21 or 22. I don't know when his birthday was, but at any rate, he tried to take off from Wheeler Field during Pearl Harbor, and his plane crashed, and he became the first member of the United States Armed Forces to die in aerial combat in World War II. I didn't know if you knew that, but I just wanted to, for the benefit of the listeners, give them a little bit of this historical fact. Sometimes these things are interesting. Of course, he probably is spinning in his grave now, finding out what happened to this country and the direction it's going. And I just want to make mention that you had brought up the B-2 bomber, and of course, that's operated by the U.S. Air Force, and that's the B-2, I guess they, for some reason, named it Spirit, and I know you brought that up in your statement to the court, and I want you to read that entire thing towards the end of the broadcast here. But just for the listeners, the B-2 stealth strategic bomber built by Northrop Grumman costs the taxpayers a little over $1 billion for each one, and they've built 21 of them, and the entire cost of the program through 2004 has been about $50 billion. This is to carry, I guess, nuclear weapons and to do some other nasty things. And you said that you don't know how many drones there are operating, but they're basically playing the video games from Whiteman Air Force Base, but they don't take off from Whiteman. They're somewhere located near their intended target, right?
Right, right. And then through satellite connections, their actual operation is from Whiteman and other spots in the United States.
Okay. So you learned about this, and there was, I guess, some kind of a protest planned in front of Whiteman?
Yes, well, to step back a little bit, in April of 2009, I took part in a 10-day demonstration at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada outside of Las Vegas, which at the time was, I believe, the Air Force's only facility for flying these drones, and was arrested there finally for trespassing, tried, and eventually found guilty and given a one-day sentence for time served for the night we spent in the Las Vegas jail. And then, as this has been growing, a year ago last April, went out to New York State, and at Hancock Field, which is actually the commercial civilian airport in Syracuse, New York, the New York Air National Guard has a F-16 wing that was refitted to fly drones. And so actually drones are being flown out of the commercial airport in Syracuse.
Great.
And was arrested again there and then had a trial last fall that lasted more than a week. And I live about 125 miles from Whiteman Air Force Base, a little bit more. So when I heard that folks in Kansas City were planning demonstrations there, I, of course, went down there and joined them. And this was a part of an event called the Trifecta Resista, which has a website, and I think it's trifectaresista.org. The time of the planning of this, Bradley Manning was still at Leavenworth, which is just outside of Kansas City. And also in this Kansas City limits, there is the Department of Energy with the city of Kansas City, funding with municipal bonds of all things, is building a new nuclear weapons plant, which is a part of a trilateral there at Alamogordo, and then at Tennessee, they're building a whole new infrastructure for building the next generation of nuclear weapons. And so we had back in April 13th, 14th, and 15th, the folks in Kansas City Peaceworks organized the Trifecta Resista, which was a very intense weekend with a demonstrations at Fort Leavenworth, place of Bradley Manning's incarceration, calling for his freedom. And then we went to the site where they're building the new nuclear weapons plant in Kansas City itself, and then we went out to Whiteman Air Force Base. So we had 4 people arrested at the weapons factory site, and then 3 of us at Whiteman was a part of this big event.
Okay. When was it? What was the exact date? When did it start? When did you get there? How many people were there?
There were about 40 of us who gathered at a state park, Knobnosser State Park, right near the main gate of the base. This was on April 15th, and we adapted we called an indictment, a list of the laws that international and domestic that these drones are violating daily. And all of us signed that, and then we had a short rally outside the gates of Whiteman Air Force Base. And then three of us went to the gate and asked to be directed to the headquarters to deliver this to the commander of the base. And we were refused entry, we were arrested, and then as we were being arrested, a bus pulled up and all of these military police in full riot gear poured out of the bus, some 50 of them, and formed a line. And I just have to ask your listeners to, if you look at YouTube and search for Trifecta Resista, you'll see several videos of this, and you have to see it to believe it. It's hard to believe this is not a joke, that this is not Monty Python or maybe a scene from the producer's movie with the Springtime for Hitler chorus line. These soldiers with shields and shin guards and everything got in a line and did this amazing kind of dance where they two steps forward, one step back, and they're kicking their legs up high and they're beating their batons on their shields and grunting in unison. This routine had been all choreographed and carefully rehearsed, I'm sure.
Wow.
And then to see our group, which was like old people and young people, college students, and some of them wearing flip-flops, and people just holding signs on a public area of a government installation. We found out later at our trial that this was called a confrontation management team. And I'm someone who, as part of my work with Voices, I do nonviolence trainings. And this is something, conflict management team, wow, this kind of action could only... They did testify, too, that they looked us up ahead of time and knew we were nonviolent. And I think they were counting on it. Because if we were not nonviolent, this would have provoked. If we were not very disciplined in
right.
nonviolence, this could have provoked violence. And we also found out that they only use us for demonstrations. So this confrontation team would not be there if somebody were to secretly plan any kind of invasion or something. They would just simply wouldn't be there. They're just pulled together when they think there's going to be American citizens outside their gates. And it's meant to scare people away. So this was very disturbing. This is kind of funny. And if you see the video, you could see people kind of laughing and like, what is this?
I mean,
amused horror at this really obscene song and dance. In sentencing, I referred to this as goose-stepping military riot police. And the judge, for all the things that I said that I thought might be offensive to the judge, this is the one thing that he responded to, was he found it personally revolting and deeply offended that I refer to our fighting men and women as goose-stepping riot police, and said that he thought that I was invoking, comparing them to Nazis.
Right. If anybody took a look at what you're talking about here on YouTube, they could see that they're actually wearing these high leather boots, it looks like, just like the Nazis did wear. And you didn't say Nazi.
They just simply are. I was
right.
And at the trial, we had, actually, this, they had like a 5-foot-high screen. We had it almost life-size that the judge saw those videos that we played as evidence. So he saw the same thing that you would see if you looked it up on YouTube. He didn't take offense that they were goose-stepping. And he didn't take offense that these were U.S. military who were specifically and deliberately trying to intimidate U.S. citizens who were clearly exercising their First Amendment rights. The military personnel that we cross-examined on the stand during the trial all said that at no time, before or during this action, did they perceive that we were any threat to the security of the base or to the security, the safety of their personnel.
Right.
So this was not any kind of response to any even perceived or feared violence in our part, because they were absolutely sure that we were nonviolent. That was never a question in this.
Right. Brian, I forgot to ask, how old are you?
I'm 56.
How many people were there? I know you said three people went up to the base to ask to go to headquarters, but how many?
There were some 40 of us.
So you went to the gate. Of course, you can't get in unless you have a military ID, and I guess nobody did. And you asked to go to the headquarters just to deliver a message.
Actually, that's not true, that you can't get in without a military ID. And we grilled the security police on this, is that visitors regularly come, and they ask you some questions. And if they have to call into headquarters to find out if it's okay, they do. But that regularly people come. There's a large housing unit there if you want to visit your friend, if your brother's stationed at Whiteman Air Force Base, or even salespeople and vendors who have business. If you have legitimate business, you explain it at the gate, and then they let you in. in, and if they have to escort you, they escort you. What it is that they decided ahead of time, because they knew we were coming, that our protest was not legitimate business, and they wouldn't let us in. As one of our witnesses, we had Colonel Ann Wright. Many of your listeners might know of her. She's the retired Army colonel who went into the diplomatic corps. She was actually in charge of opening the first embassy in Kabul in 2001, first one since the Soviet War.
Right.
And she resigned her post with the State Department in protest of the Iraq War. But she testified to us. She has a law degree and has a strong military background and has worked with security on bases. And she testified that there would have been no problem with security if they simply would have let us on to deliver our message and they could have escorted us. There was no logical or legal reason for them to bar us, that there's no reason that we were not allowed on except that we had a grievance with the government that this branch of the government simply didn't want to hear.
Right.
And that's why we were arrested rather than allowed onto the base to deliver this message. This is the kind of thing that happens at military bases all the time. If somebody has some kind of delivery or something, people at the gate decide that if this is legitimate, they let you on. And according to the First Amendment, our coming with a grievance is official business. It is allowed. Our right to do that cannot be abridged. And yet it was, and the judge upheld that.
It's a shame what these traitors have done to the First Amendment, what they've done to the Constitution, but that's a whole other story, and we're going to get more into that with your statement, which is really a beautiful piece of work you really can write, Brian. I was really impressed by that. So they turned you down there. After they turned you down, what was the next thing that happened?
We were standing by the gate, and they told us we had to go away, and we said, no, in conscience, we can't. Can't leave. We believe that you're supposed to let us in, and so we'll wait here till you do.
Nice.
And instead, the three of us were taken into custody and taken to a building on the base where we were interviewed very briefly, just identification. And after about an hour, we were given citations to appear in court and sent on our way. And so then we went to trial on September 10th. And we had tried to make it clear that our effort at going to court was not to get bogged down in legal nonsense about a trespass that didn't really happen. And we wanted to use the opportunity to put the drones on trial. And we had filed motions to allow expert witnesses, including former Attorney General Ramsey Clark as an expert on international law, and then Professor Bill Quigley from Loyola Law School, former director for the Center for Constitutional Rights, and then Colonel Ann Wright, whom I mentioned, asking them to be allowed to be witnesses on our behalf. And we also had among us Kathy Kelly, who's my colleague with Voices for Creative Nonviolence, who travels often to Afghanistan. In fact, she's there now. She'll be coming home in a few days. Unfortunately, she was there present at the base and witnessed the arrest, so they could not bar her from testifying. They would not allow Ramsey Clark to testify at all. And what the judge said, the words he used in denying that, was that domestic law trumps international law. Of course, the Constitution says otherwise, but unfortunately the judge has lots of other courts have decided with him, so he can get away with that. But Bill Quigley was allowed to testify on very limited basis, and Colonel Ann Wright on an even more limited basis. So we were able to use our witnesses and actually, interestingly, cross-examining the witnesses for the government also was very helpful to our case because they admitted that what we were doing was peaceable. They admitted that they knew we were there because we had a grievance over the drones. They admitted that we didn't disrupt, cause any kind of security emergency by being there. And so we were able to use them as well to make our case. I asked Captain Stamper, who was in charge of the security detail that day, I brought up the hypothetical situation because we walked from Nob Nostra Park to the gate of the base, and for about a half mile or so of that walk, we were going along a fence, and inside that fence was base housing, and it looked, for all the world, like a suburban neighborhood.
Right.
Houses and swing sets and everything, some of them with white picket fences, except that there were signs along this chain link fence, had signs saying, military installation, no trespassing. And I just said to him, this hypothetical situation, what would happen if when I was walking along that road and I saw through that fence, I saw an adult abusing a child, and perhaps even lethally, would I have been arrested for trespassing if I'd climbed over the fence and tried to intervene
right.
in that case? And he just looked really shocked at the question, and he said, I can't tell you the answer to that. And he couldn't tell me the answer because the answer would be, of course not. No trespassing sign is sacred. You can ignore no trespassing sign in certain circumstances. Kathy Kelly on the stand talked about a young girl that she and I had met together in Afghanistan, a 9-year-old child who lost many members of her family to a drone attack, living in a squalid refugee camp with the remnants of her family. And her father opened up her clothes and showed the stump of her arm.
Oh, geez.
That she'd lost an arm. And I just said to the judge then in my closing remarks that I was not offering a hypothetical situation. This kind of abuse is going on. The difference is that the perpetrator is in Missouri and the child is in Afghanistan and in Pakistan.
Right.
What we did was an attempt to intervene in that way. And I think that's one of the scary things about this technology is it brings the war home. Like the My Lai massacre, the victims are in a place thousands of miles away, but the perpetrator is right there in your neighborhood.
Right.
In My Lai, there was a man named Hugh Thompson, who was a soldier who was responsible for a helicopter unit that was doing something else in the area. And he almost got court-martialed after he saw the devastation going on. Some 500 children were killed in My Lai in Vietnam, 500 civilians, but that massacre stopped. Who knows how many more would have died because some other soldiers put themselves in between the victim and the soldiers who were perpetrating this crime. And our effort was pretty much in that spirit. And this is what the new technology requires, more imaginative ways of responding.
So you guys were just outside the base with placards and microphones and megaphones and all that?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. Okay, so you eventually, of course, did make it onto the base, and not in the fashion that you wanted to.
Right,
but
right, in handcuffs.
Right, yeah, right. This started in April.
Yes, our first initial hearing was in June, and Ron Faust and I, who went to trial, we pled not guilty and were given the trial date in September. But Mark Kenny, who's a veteran of the nuclear Navy, was arrested with us, and he pled guilty in June. And among his reasons, he had several personal reasons, but also the judge gave him his rights and told him that by pleading guilty, he was waiving a right to have a trial, to call witnesses, to cross-examine the government's witnesses. Mark just said, Your Honor, thanks for explaining that, but those rights don't exist anymore.
Wow.
And he cited the National Defense Authorization Act, saying that the president could decide that any U.S. citizen is a supporter of terrorism, and without trial, without citing any evidence, could order any one of us taken off the street and jailed indefinitely without any court process at all. Because the government has that right, the fact that they're not using it right now doesn't mean that we still have our right to have a trial. And then cited the information coming out more and more about how the government looks at this. And Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, some months earlier had a speech at Northwestern University Law School, said that when the president decides that someone should die, that their constitutional right to due process has not been violated, because the president's decision that somebody is a danger to American security is due process in and of itself.
I don't know what to say about that.
That was one of his reasons for not going to trial. Just put me in jail. So Marcus Scott was sentenced to 4 months in prison, which he is finishing in the middle of next month. He's at the federal prison camp in Duluth, Minnesota right now.
4 months in prison for what exactly did he do?
Trying to deliver a piece of paper to the headquarters building, listing the crimes of the drones and demanding that these crimes stop.
Did he hit anybody?
No.
Okay. Did he spit at anyone?
No. And the testimony of the military police who arrested us was that we were only respectful and cooperative and not acting in any way that raised any kind of concern or fear among the police who arrested us. So no, it was clearly classic peaceable assembly to redress grievances. Expert witness on the Constitution, Bill Quigley, who was allowed to testify, said that what we had done was exactly what the framers of the Constitution, of the First Amendment of the Constitution, had in mind about what the government is supposed to be protecting.
So for exercising the First Amendment rights right now, he's in prison.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I hope the listeners understand exactly what you're saying and what I'm saying here.
It bears repeating because it is pretty astonishing.
I don't get it. I don't understand. The protest was in April.
Mm-hmm.
In June, they, I guess, arraigned you.
Yes.
And they said, okay, September 10th, that was your trial date?
Yes.
And it went from September 10th till when?
October 11th was our sentencing date.
How long did the actual trial go on for?
5 or 6 hours, I think.
And it was a trial in front of just the judge or a jury?
Yes, of a federal magistrate. In federal court, if you are facing 6 months or less, you are not eligible for a jury trial. They can take away your liberty, kind of a compromise on the Constitution itself. But they can take away 6 months of your life with a judge, but they need to at least give you the chance to have a jury to sentence you to more than that, which of course is also a legal fiction because the pressure is put on defendants to plead guilty or just go with a bench trial with a judge. Much simpler for the government, is pretty intense, and very few people actually avail themselves of a jury trial, but they have to get you to waive that right. So our charge was just at the limit to which we could not have a jury trial.
Okay. And this particular judge you're talking about is United States Magistrate Judge Matt J. Whitworth, right?
That's correct.
I'm looking at a website here. He was born in 1958 in Missouri. And, of course, he was a lawyer. That's one of the great ironies is that
right.
People have so little respect for lawyers, yet most judges were lawyers before. And then all of a sudden they become judges. You're supposed to have respect for them.
Yeah, he was a prosecutor for many years, too.
Right. Exactly. So this fellow who obviously does not think much of the First Amendment, or maybe even the Constitution as a whole, this is the fellow that you went up against September 10th. Just for 5 hours or so, and then he found you guilty that day?
Yes, and it was just he found us guilty on the basis of things that were not testified to at the trial. And as he said when he was sentencing Mark Kinney earlier, he admitted that the security of the B-2 bomber, even though we had not spoken of the B-2 bomber at all, weighs very heavily on his decisions, that protecting the B-2 bomber he considers a very important obligation. Former Attorney General Ramsey Clark, after being refused to be allowed to testify, he was in the courtroom with us, and he had commented on that, saying that that's a horrific thing for a judge to admit, that when a judge is passing a verdict and rendering a sentence, he is supposed to be considering the law and considering the evidence that's presented in the courtroom in testimony. These military police who testified against us all testified that we'd not endangered anything going on at the base. And it also raises questions, too, that the B-2 bomber itself, a weapon of mass destruction that's in contradiction to lots of the treaties that we've signed in the UN Charter. And so he's, in a sense, a protector of not only those goose-stepping soldiers who are violating our rights, but also another, in effect, criminal enterprise going on at that base.
Good old judge, former lawyer, well, still a lawyer, but he cut his teeth on lawyering. Now he's cutting his teeth on judging. And he's there to protect. The B-2 stealth bomber needs protection. And Magistrate Judge Matt J. Whitworth, I guess he's not a full judge. A magistrate judge doesn't have all of the rights and responsibilities of a full judge, I think. I interviewed somebody.
Right. His term is limited where a judge is appointed for life.
So he's like on probation.
Yeah, he's like a non-tenured.
He has to prove his mettle. He has to prove that he's going to protect those B-2s and anything in his district. Then they'll take him off probation.
Right, right.
Yeah, I got it.
You know, they don't promote people to the full judgeship by showing imagination and initiative and creativity. You've got to produce the results that the folks who make those decisions want.
That's right, exactly. So, and right now, the trend is to continue to suffocate and step on the United States Constitution and individual rights. So the judge is playing the game. That's a shame. I'd like to have a word with the judge and a couple of these other people face to face and look at them in the eye. And like you did, as I listen to what you're saying, I'm still in shock. And I don't know what it's going to take for the majority of Americans to get as shocked and disgusted. Just say, look, enough's enough. You're going in the wrong direction. Stop. Take a breath here. This is absolutely and unequivocally revolting to me. As an American and as somebody concerned with what made this country what it was, and it's not anymore. I mean, am I off base here or do you agree with me, Brian?
Oh, yeah. What I said in trial after we showed the video, I just said every American ought to be disturbed and ashamed to see this.
This was on September 10th.
Yes.
So that thing lasted, like you said, 5 or 6 hours, and they said the sentencing was October 11th, and you had to go in front of good old Matt Whitworth again?
Yes.
What happened then?
First, the prosecutor, who, interestingly, this case was not prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office, as is usual with a federal crime, but this was prosecuted by Captain Michael Pearson of the U.S. Air Force. And he's from the Judge Advocate General's office at Whiteman Air Force Base. Usually if you commit a crime, the prosecutor is not going to be the victim's attorney, the alleged victim's attorney, but in this case it is.
Oh,
so we were prosecuted directly by the Air Force. And there's some kind of precedence for that. There are reasons why they can say that's legit, but it still seems questionable to me. And I don't know that if a prosecutor who is not a member of the Air Force would be as zealous in this prosecution.
Wow. Military members can now prosecute civilians.
Yes.
All right.
And that's what happened. And he gave recommendations for us that he recommended that I be given the maximum sentence of 6 months. And Ron Faust, who is a retired Christian minister, I have a fairly extensive record from my years of activism. And Ron doesn't, and he recommended 2 months in prison for Ron. I represented myself, and Ron had a real great attorney from Columbia, Missouri, Ruth O'Neill, representing him. And she asked that Ron be put on probation, and the judge acceded to that, but gave him 5 years probation, the maximum probation allowed for the offense. And so for 5 years, Ron will not be allowed to leave the Kansas City metro area without prior permission.
Wow.
And he has to make monthly visits to the probation office, and his home will need to be open any hour of the day or night to a visit from the probation office.
Or a SWAT team.
Of course, no drugs involved in this whole scenario, but he will be subject to a monthly urinalysis test.
Which is illegal, right?
What's legal or illegal now, I don't know.
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore.
As a condition of probation, because at any time, if the probation office and or Judge Whitworth decide that Ron is not cooperating fully with the probation, Ron could be sentenced to 6 months in prison. So this is going to be hanging over him
for
5 years.
For half a decade, he's going to be on the short leash for no reason.
Right. And for me, at the end of May, I'll be done with this. So.
Let's get to you now.
The prosecutor makes recommendations, and then we answer. You've read my answer to the government's suggestion. I was not in any mood to ask for mercy, and I also really felt from seeing how Mark was sentenced that I had nothing to gain at this point by being too polite, that I wasn't interested in playing a game to placate the judge to try to make for a lighter sentence, because I don't think I was going to get it anyway.
Right.
So,
well, you're a dangerous guy. I mean, you hold up signs and you want the world to be more peaceful. I mean, that's very dangerous. And you exercise your First Amendment rights. So,
yes.
Yeah, I agree with the judge. He should have given you more than 6 months.
One thing the judge did grant that I'm grateful for is that I wasn't locked up right away, that I will be informed sometime in the next couple weeks of the place where the U.S. Bureau of Prisons computer will spit out a place where there's room for me, and that could be anywhere in the United States, potentially, where I'll be serving these 6 months. And so I will be surrendering myself to a federal prison yet to be designated on November 30th.
November 30th. Okay, so for holding up the sign and going up to the gate and asking to go to headquarters to deliver a piece of paper with ink on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a felony?
No, it's actually a petty offense. And the six-month potential sentence is there, but it's never used except for First Amendment kind of cases.
Yeah.
The judge could just as easily have given a $5 fine, and
right.
Trespassing cases happen all the time, and people don't go to jail for 6 months if you're staying in the bar after closing time or something like that. You don't face these kind of penalties, but because it is a protest, and I think it's a protest that struck a chord. Like I said, I didn't bring up the Nazi reference at all. That was something the judge thought of, and I think that was evoked not by what I said, but what the evidence that was before the judge. And instead of being upset that our armed forces are acting in such a way, as they certainly are, he chose to transfer his anger to me for mentioning it.
Plus, he wants to get that nasty little word magistrate removed from before his name, because he wants it to say U.S. District Court Judge, not
right.
U.S. Magistrate Judge. That carries much more cachet to have the district, because then you're tenured. Did you have appealed the judge's decision?
Of course, the appeal is always available, but the trouble here is systemic. It's not one judge making some bad decisions. Judges' bad decisions are ones that have been upheld over the last decade or so by appellate courts, and the circuit that Jefferson City is in is particularly conservative, I think. So I think that would be an effort in futility at this point.
Conservative in the sense that they actually have less respect for the Constitution and the amendments?
Yes, the trend toward disrespect for the First Amendment and the other amendments of the Constitution has been going on for a while, and Judge Whitworth is not unique, unfortunately.
Mm. Now, Brian, this case is, as we mentioned before, particularly disturbing on many levels, and you would think that such a case would draw the attention of the mainstream media, or at least you would hope that that would be the case. Is that the case now?
No, it's not. If you look for it, I don't know that it's ever seen print anywhere, but there's an AP story of about two paragraphs just the fact that the sentencing happened and the bare bones of it, I got 6 months in prison, is on websites and newspapers all over the place. But not much beyond that. In the world press, though, I've heard from a reporter from Der Stern in Germany who wants to inquire about coming to the United States when I'm in jail and visiting me there and interviewing me from prison. And I've been interviewed for Telesur, which is out of Caracas, Venezuela, and is broadcasted all over Latin America. As it happens, on Canadian Broadcasting Company, they want to talk to me sometime just before I turn myself in on November 20th. So there's interest internationally, and there's interest by many groups. My statement has been on websites all over the place. So among people interested in issues of peace and justice in this country, they all pretty much know about it. But as far as getting into the daily newspapers and the mainstream media news sources, no, there's been nothing.
Which is par for the course. I just thought I'd ask. And I didn't expect anything less. Unfortunately, and it's sad that this mainstream media bloc has such a lock on the populace, and the populace is really unable to break free from them and to think for themselves and on their own. Did you happen to hear about the charges being dismissed against those nuclear missile launch protesters in California?
Yes, I did. Many of them are friends of mine, and that's good news. I'm waiting to hear the details to see what's behind that.
It's a shame that in one part of the country they can understand that what you had done and what these folks had done is clearly protected by the Constitution. And not only that, but it's healthy for our country, for a democracy. It's a shame that the people in your neck of the woods can't understand that. And it's a shame that these type of rulings aren't more standardized to reflect what the Constitution actually says. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes, yes.
What you're about to read, did you read this prior to the sentencing?
Yes.
So do you think that what you said in the letter and what you're about to read to the audience, do you think that had an impact on what he was going to do, or do you think he had already decided what he was going to do?
I really felt like it was already decided. But it didn't help. Traditionally, this is the time when a newly convicted person bows his head and grovels.
Yeah.
Says, Your Honor, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize what I was doing. I'll never do it again. Give me one more chance and I'll change. Please don't lock me up. Don't throw me in jail. I'll never do it again. And that was not how I was supposed to act. I guess I don't think it would have done me much good anyway. So
personally, I'm so glad that you didn't, because I would probably do the same thing. I mean, people seem to forget about Nathan Hale and what he said. But I would encourage the listeners, and I am going to post a link to this traitor's website, this magistrate Judge Matt J. Whitworth, because he is a traitor. He's a traitor to the Constitution and the First Amendment. And he's a traitor to you, Ryan, and he's a traitor to me, and he's a traitor to everybody in the United States. And I would encourage listeners to write a letter to this traitor and let him know what you think of
him. Please do. And look into the case yourself and don't just go by what I'm saying. Read about it. Some people have said we start a letter-writing campaign to ask him to reduce the sentence, and I am not inclined toward that. The issue's a lot bigger than what's happening to me.
Right.
Talk about the Constitution and talk especially about the people of Afghanistan and Pakistan who are actually being shot at by these weapons from Whiteman Air Force Base.
And blown up and dismembered and
pounded out of their homes. And there's much more serious issues here than what is going to happen to me over the next 6 months.
Right. And you said you've been in jail before, right?
Yes, for similar things.
Right. But not for this.
Not this long.
Right. And what was the longest you're in jail?
Actually, for 4 months. And that was almost 20 years ago.
For something along these lines, though.
Yeah.
Right. First Amendment.
And actually, last year in December from the Hancock Air Base protests in Syracuse, the judge there sentenced me to 10 days in jail, which I served in the county jail there.
So why don't you go ahead and read this wonderful letter. You read this right to Whitworth, right?
Right.
Did he have your undivided attention?
He did. And his body language did not show that he was paying attention, but he was not happy.
It's too bad that's all that you could have done to him. It's too bad you couldn't really made him uncomfortable in some fashion. But go ahead, please, Brian.
Okay. Mark Twain called free speech the privilege of the grave, a privilege never afforded to the living save as an empty formality, not to be regarded seriously as an actual possession. He said, and I quote, "As an active privilege, it ranks with the privilege of committing murder. We may exercise it if we're willing to take the consequences. Murder is forbidden both in form and in fact. Free speech is granted in form, but forbidden in fact. Murder," Mark Twain said, "is sometimes punished. Free speech always."
I just want to interrupt you for a second. That is so powerful. I never heard of that, but wow. And Mark Twain was around, what, in the 19th century? And he said this?
And actually, this is one of the essays he didn't want published while he was still alive.
Wow.
That he put an embargo on because he didn't want to face the consequences of saying that while he was alive.
That is a lot to ponder. Go ahead, Brian.
Punishing free speech and letting murder off the hook is the order of the day in this courtroom. How to speak of an appropriate sentence when no crime has been committed, no crime committed at least by the defendants. Last month's trial in this courtroom concerning a protest of killer drones flown from Whiteman Air Force Base left no doubt that this is the case. Each of the government's witnesses, all of them Air Force police personnel, testified that participants in this protest were nonviolent, respectful, and peaceable in assembling at Whiteman Air Force Base, a government installation, to petition that government for redress of grievance, demanding that the remote control killing carried out from Whiteman cease. They testified that at no time before or during our protest did they perceive us as a threat. Our expert witnesses testified that our behavior was consistent with the activities of the drafters of the First Amendment, intended to be protected, not persecuted, by the government. The order and safety of the base would not have been compromised had the security police allowed us to proceed to the headquarters to deliver our petition. No testimony to the contrary was offered to this court. Instead of planning to accommodate a constitutionally protected peaceable assembly, however, the Air Force chose intimidation and conspired to deprive us of the rights they are sworn to protect. We learned from government witnesses that the flanks of goose-stepping riot police is a, quote, confrontation management team deployed only in the case of pre-announced events. Whiteman security did not call out the team to defend the base, but to intimidate citizens engaged in lawful activities. The court was mistaken a month ago when it said that our group was allowed to assemble on the highway right-of-way by the Air Force and that the space provided for us met free speech requirements of reasonable time and place. This place in question is not only outside the base's jurisdiction, it is outside the sight and hearing of anyone on the base. The court's decision is a part of a widening disintegration of civil liberties, where speech is tolerated only in designated and remote free speech zones, where it cannot be heard by the government, and criminalized in any place where that speech might actually have a chance to be understood. Intended or not, the court's message is a chilling one, that a citizen's constitutional right to assemble to petition the government extends only to places outside government facilities and where the government does not have to hear it. The court's easy dismissal of international law as not, quote, trumping domestic law has precedence, but is all the more disturbing for this fact. Last fall, when I was on trial for a drone protest in New York State, where, in contrast to this court, former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark was permitted to testify in international law, Judge Gideon, after listening to Ramsey Clark speak of the Nuremberg Principles at length, leaned over the bench and asked him, "All this is interesting, but what is the enforcement mechanism? Who is responsible for enforcing international law?" "They are," responded Mr. Clark, pointing to us defendants. "And so," he said to Judge Gideon, "are you. Every citizen is responsible under international law, and every judge more so." In our trial here last month, as in our protests in April, our intention has been to put the illegally operated Predator drones on trial, and so we have focused on the machines that are sowing death and terror in Afghanistan and Pakistan by remote control from Whiteman Air Force Base. It was never our intention to address or to protest the weapon system that is a larger mission of Whiteman, namely the B-2 stealth bomber. However, Judge Whitworth, both in sentencing Mark Kenney and in our trial, you noted that your commitment to maintain the security of the B-2 weighs heavily in your decisions. For a judge to admit to being swayed by a consideration other than the law, not to mention that that consideration is the security of a weapon of mass destruction, raises obvious questions about that judge's impartiality. For my part, Judge Whitworth, I'm grateful to you for calling our attention to the larger picture. It is not, of course, the technology of robotics that we protest, but the murderous and criminal uses our government puts it to. The drones are the weapon of choice of the Kurd administration's wars of aggression, but it was the B-2s from Whiteman that first violated Afghan airspace 11 years ago this week and began killing the people of Afghanistan. The crimes against humanity that began in October 2001 with B-2 airstrikes on a defenseless civilian population continue to today with drones operated from that very base. The B-2 bomber, blasphemously nicknamed the Spirit Bomber, is also at a moment's notice ready to commit the ultimate non-thinkable war crime of delivering a first-strike nuclear payload to any place on Earth. A Cold War boondoggle, the B-2 stealth capability shields it from radar the Soviets never got around to developing before their own tragic empire finally imploded. This is a prime illustration of President Eisenhower's admonition, quote, "Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed, This world in arms is spending not money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. This is not a life at all in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
Wow, again, powerful. Eisenhower, that must have come from his farewell address, right?
Couldn't have said that. And,
no.
Like, free speech is the privilege of the dead or the people retiring.
Or lame ducks.
On the official website for Whiteman Air Force Base, I found the base's mission statement. It is as brief as it is vicious. Skilled and proud airmen, providing full-spectrum, expeditionary, B-2 global strike and combat support capabilities to geographic commanders and the commander, with a capital C, U.S. STRATCOM, while supporting Team Whiteman. We kick down doors and kill targets, weapons on target, on time, with an exclamation point. I have visited Afghanistan and know that 11 years of NATO troops kicking down doors has not brought peace there. Often soldiers don't seem to know whose door they've kicked in or whether the target they kill is who they are hunting for. B-2 bombers from a great height or even drones with state-of-the-art video feed do no better. We know that sometimes even children are named as targets to be killed by drones. Children regularly are among the collateral damage. The targets themselves are often victims of assassination rather than legitimate casualties of war. 11 years of kicking down doors has only made the world a more frightening place and has earned our nation more enemies and less security. Whiteman's mission is not counterterrorism. It is terrorism. Judge Whitworth, you told me at the close of our trial you do not take sentencing someone to prison lightly. This case offers challenges. In my pre-sentence report, it says, quote, there are no identifiable victims of this offense, end quote. Beyond your own surmises, there was no suggestion at trial that our conduct threatened any person, property, or institution. The question for you is how to pass the sentence commensurate with harm done when the substance of the crime itself is only a good deed without harmful consequences to any.
And is crime in quotes too?
Yes. And I expect nothing other than a prison sentence today. I accept this without regret and will, if allowed, surrender myself to a designated prison some weeks from now. But I cannot say that I see justice in this. I admit that my conduct was as the government described it at trial. That conduct, however, does not constitute a crime, but is a response to one. It is conduct this court should be protecting. Our expert witness, Bill Quigley, spoke from the stand here last month about the difference between law and justice and the ongoing struggle to bring these into one. Since first entering this courthouse back in June, I have been ruminating over the words circling the great seal of the United States on the floor of the rotunda of this courthouse. Let justice flow like a river. How did these words from the Bible make it into this modern tax-supported government building? I wonder if these words of Scripture might have made it here to the secular domain from the prophet Amos through Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who quoted them in his classic Letter from the Birmingham Jail. In any case, these lofty words ring hollow in this place. Justice has not flowed through these proceedings, and even law itself has proved but a disappointing trickle. Another biblical quote suggests itself for the trampling under the feet of the litigants, defendants, judges, and attorneys who enter this building, oblivious to the unpunished murder in places far away, but perpetrated from a place not so far from here. This from the prophet Isaiah. My beloved looked for justice and found it denied, for righteousness, but heard cries of distress.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So much to take in, really, in this letter.
My only comment was the goose-stepping riot police.
Yeah, but he sat there patiently throughout the entire reading of it.
Yes, yeah, grant him that. There's not much he could do. The right of elocution is someone that we still have, but again, it's rarely fully one of those privileges, rarely used, because at this point, most people are hoping for a little bit of mercy from a court that I had given up on already.
Right, and I commend you for that. So now, geez, month and a half from now, they're supposed to contact you?
They should be contacting me in the next few weeks.
But November 30th is the date, though.
The day that I'd be turning myself in.
And where do you turn yourself in?
At the prison.
At the prison that they select, you mean?
Yes, where we'll be designated.
So, in other words, you might have to go to New York State.
It's probably going to be somewhere in the Midwest, but where Mark was sent, he lives in Omaha, and the prison he was sent to is in Duluth, which is almost 500 miles away.
He had to actually find a way to get there.
Yes, which is preferable, actually, to if they had sent us to prison directly from the courtroom. That's a very arduous journey from county jail to county jail until you get to the designated place, which in Mark's case, and probably for mine, a minimum security facility, which is slightly better accommodations than a county jail. That's going to be my expense and trouble to find my way there.
Do you have family out there in Iowa?
I live here with my wife and then a couple other people in our little Catholic Wicker community. And our children are grown. I have a son in Buffalo and a daughter in Eugene, Oregon.
What do they think about your ex?
Oh, they're supportive.
And every American should be absolutely 100% supportive of what you're doing. If for nothing else than defending the document that created this once great country. I hate saying that, once great, but unfortunately it's a fact. Would you agree with that?
You can be forgiven for saying that. It is harsh, but it's...
It's accurate.
Yep.
How do you feel about what's going to happen in a couple of weeks?
I go with the support, prayers, and love of a lot of people. And, you know, as bad as things are here, I have friends in prison in Bahrain and many other places where things are worse as far as the prison conditions. It'll be a time that I think I'll be able to use fruitfully, time of sabbatical to do some reflecting and writing and...
Reading. Would you do it again?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I'll be taking a 6-month break from it, but otherwise...
But afterwards, if there is a protest,
yeah,
and even
yeah,
if it's at Whiteman, you would do the same thing.
I would consider it, yes.
Brian Terrell, a co-coordinator for Voices for Creative Nonviolence, and a great American, an unbelievable American. I personally want to thank you for what you did, Brian, and I want to thank you for all the time you spent today explaining all this to the listeners, and thank you for doing what many of us should be doing with our time, protecting the country and protecting the Constitution and the First Amendment. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.